Welcome to Foxcast SLP, a podcast for clinicians made by clinicians. It's brought to you by Fox Rehabilitation. Find out more at foxrehab.org.
Welcome to Foxcast. I'm your host, Jimmy McKay. On the program today, bringing in somebody who's no stranger to educating other clinicians about issues inside their profession, Allison Frederick. Allison, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jimmy. I'm very excited to be here.
Your background, you are a speech-language pathologist, but you get to do something a little bit different from time to time. What is that?
Yes. So I've been a speech and language pathologist for the past 12 years. I started my career in long-term care and subacute rehab, and then eventually transitioned to acute rehabilitation with a concentration in acquired brain injury. And I am fortunate enough to be able to educate and teach continuing education courses to other professionals.
That's cool.
Which is really exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. You get to do that with ARC Seminars and the website arcseminars.net, where we found out about you. I always love when you find out about something great to read or download or watch or a course to take from other colleagues. I find word of mouth, and you just feel like you trust that word of mouth when you trust that friend and that colleague. And that's how we found out about you. Some of our Fox Rehab colleagues were taking some of your courses.
All right, great. Yeah, I mean, I absolutely feel the same way. You know, I'm more likely to take a course if someone who I've worked with for a long time recommends it to me. I'm like, all right, yeah, I trust them. That sounds good. And with ARC Seminars, we are a clinician-run, owned and operated company, which is great. So our approach to education is a little bit different than maybe some of the other companies out there. You know, we're really looking to give people functional, practical takeaway things that they can use in their practice the next day.
Allison, that's a perfect radio segue now. Functional things that they can take away the next day. Yes. And that's what we're doing right now.
Great. Yeah, that's what I'm here for.
So we're here to talk about acquired brain injury and behavior management. Now, do you teach a course specifically on this, or would this maybe be a component of something else that you'd teach?
Currently, I do teach a course about brain injury centered around acquired brain injury and behavior management, because it is such an intimidating topic for many clinicians. Mm-hmm. You know, it is a very unique population to work with, and they pose a lot of challenges that can make a lot of clinicians uncomfortable, you know, and a lot of people don't know how to react in certain situations. So I felt it was important to kind of be highlighting this and to really talk about acquired brain injury as a chronic health problem and not necessarily just, you know, a one and done rehab stay kind of thing.
Perfect. Well, let's start from the start. Mm-hmm. Let's not skip over anything since you mentioned some people might be intimidated by it. Let's start with the review of the definition of acquired brain injury and define the two main types, the TBI and NTBI.
Sure. So the broad umbrella of acquired brain injury refers to any kind of injury to the brain that occurs after birth, right? Makes sense. So you acquire it later on in life. The two main types of acquired brain injury are traumatic brain injury and non-traumatic brain injury, as you mentioned. So a traumatic brain injury results in an outside insult to the brain, either from an assault or a fall, something like that. And then a non-traumatic brain injury occurs from something inside the brain, such as a brain tumor, a stroke, something like that.
So let's talk about how we scale these, because when we're going to talk to another colleague about the same patient, or we're going to try to educate ourselves on someone we haven't yet seen, we use a particular scale in terms of how to gauge that.
Yes, for patients that have sustained a traumatic brain injury, it's very helpful to use something called the Rancho Los Amigos scale. And what the Rancho Los Amigos scale is it's a 10-point scale to help quantify somebody's current level of cognitive functioning. The scale goes from a 1, which means the person is non-responsive to any kind of stimuli, all the way up to a level 10, which means the patient is, or the person is, modified, independent, and out in society and using strategies and kind of, you know, driving their own organization and executive function and things like that. And what else is really great about the Rancho scale is that it provides a common language between professionals about a patient. So it's the best way, in my opinion, to talk to your colleagues and say, well, I don't know if that activity would be appropriate for that person right now because they're only at a Rancho level 4, et cetera.
Yeah, I think it does something with language, which is very, very clear, as you mentioned. It uses very, very clear language, confused and agitated. Then when you move up from 4 to 5, confused, yes, inappropriate, non-agitated. So it is this really great 10-point continuum of being able, yes, to explain very clearly where that person might be in their stages of recovery.
Right. So a little caveat about the Rancho scale is that for a very long time, it was only an 8-point scale. And it was expanded to a 10-point scale a little while ago. The expansion from the 8 to the 10-point really captures those higher level cognitive deficits that we would see in people that may go unnoticed or missed, yeah, by everyday, you know, people that interact with them, people that aren't professionals that know what to look for. So that's what I really like about it, is that it really captures those patients and those people that have those higher level deficits that, quote, look fine, but are still having a lot of difficulty.
Sleepless nights trying to memorize the 10-point scale. So I was not familiar with, yeah, the 8-point scale. How do you bring in the Rancho Los Amigos scale into your education in terms of, do you have people focus on stages and what's appropriate in those stages, or does it come with clinical experience, or what's the best way to approach where someone is?
It's a little bit of both. So when I am teaching other professionals about the Rancho scale, I go through all the levels and I talk about what they can expect at that level. And actually the Rancho Los Amigos Center out in California has a very, very great PDF handout for clinicians and for families. So it says, if the patient presents at this level, this is what you can do to support them. So it's a nice concrete, like, hey, if this is what they're doing, this is what you can do to help support them and not overwhelm them and to appropriately interact with them. And I have found that to be a really great teaching tool for clinicians as well as for families, you know, because family education with these patients is big. so important.
Yeah. Also, where the injury is located in the brain is going to play into how the patient's cognition and behavior is going to be affected, how they'll rehabilitate, and what you're going to see in front of them. How do you start to frame that up when you educate in terms of injury location?
So what I usually do is with my patients is, you know, obviously we start with a nice thorough chart review, right? We want to look and see the mechanism of injury, the location of injury in the brain. As we know, different parts of our brain are responsible for different actions in our body. Particularly our frontal lobe is kind of like our body's CEO, right? It talks about, you know, it kind of takes care of that organizing, that planning, follow through, you know, initiation and all those types of things. I start with a great thorough chart review. I look and see where the injury in the brain is, and then I think about, okay, so what does that part of the brain normally do, and what can I expect to see from my patient now that it's injured? So it goes back to knowing your patients and also knowing your anatomy.
Yeah.
And don't feel like you have to have all of these things memorized. I tell all of my graduate students, don't worry about it. If you get stuck, just go look it up. You know, we have a lot available to us right at our fingertips now, so it's always great to make use of that and not be so hard on yourself if you can't think about something right off the top of your head.
Yeah. But that's a good point, is I think in school we focus so much on the micro, like which part, yeah, of the frontal lobe did this injury occur? That's great. But what does that mean? It's kind of like what, so right, what, now what? Okay, well now you know that it's in the frontal lobe. What are you going to do with it?
Right. And actually this is also to where educating your colleagues comes into play as well. So I'm fortunate enough to work on therapy teams. So I work with the same PT and OT when I work in patient rehab. So, you know, PTs may say, oh, well, they're walking fine, so why do I need to know about their cognition? Well, that's when you can kind of step in and say, well, their abilities to problem solve, navigate obstacles, make safe decisions while they're walking, and all those types of things come into play. And then we can further talk about like dual tasking while walking and divided attention and adding a cognitive element to what you're doing as a PT and maybe doing a cognitive tug or something like that, those types of things.
Now we get into the more granular approach, and these are the things that clinicians love to listen to and take away so they can use right away. How to approach, yes, and interact with someone who sustained an acquired brain injury, depending on, yes, those Rancho Los Amigos scale they're presenting at. How do you tend to match your interaction and approach with where they are on that scale?
The Rancho scale does have some language in it that's a little bit scary, I guess is the best way to put it, such as words, you know, like confused and agitated. So my first thing that I want people to really take away is not to take any behaviors personally. that particular patient right now doesn't have the ability to regulate their judgment and how they're behaving. So you need to kind of step outside yourself and really understand that it's not about you.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you just happen to be there at that time when that person's having a difficult time. So I would say that's definitely number one. The second thing that I would really say is try and stay as calm and cool as you can, because that patient is going to kind of feed off of your energy. I know that sounds a little strange, but think about yourself and think about if somebody is speaking to you very quickly in a very hostile manner, maybe telling you to sit down or not go there or not, you know, do something, and you don't really understand why, and you'll get defensive,
sure.
Right?
Yep.
Well, it's the same thing with our patients that have had a traumatic brain injury. You know, they don't understand and don't have the reasoning skills yet to know that, hey, this isn't okay. Why is this person getting angry with me? So if you stay calm and cool and just approach it and just talk to them, that's a much, much better way to approach that situation.
Even though I think many clinicians know this, I think hearing it and being reminded of it is definitely a big lesson. Knowing it's not about you, and your best weapon,
right,
or your best defense is going to be how you don't react to any agitation.
Exactly. You know, and I think as clinicians, we all have an idea in our head for our session. Right? PT, OT, speech.
Yep.
And even our nursing colleagues too have things that they need to get done with our patients in a certain window of time. And you go in with this great plan, and then the patient maybe isn't agreeable to the plan.
Yeah.
And then sometimes people have a tendency to think like, well, you know, we need to get this done. Well, it's not about us and our agenda. We need to take the patient that day where they're at and meet them where they are and try and tailor our activities for that patient where they're at that point in the day. It's hard because somebody may be really great first thing in the morning and then have a decline as the afternoon comes along with fatigue and things like that. And you need to tailor your sessions to where your patient's at that day.
Yeah.
You know, it's which is tough, especially for new grads in the field. You know, you're kind of very rigid in your planning, and then when it doesn't go well, you don't know what to do. And that's okay. I've been in that situation many times, and I'll probably be in it many more times in the future.
Yeah, it's not about you, and it is about them in that moment. Like you said,
yeah,
you go in with a plan, and the best laid plans often go awry in the moment.
Oh, always, absolutely.
Anything else in terms of approach or interacting with someone who's on various ends of the Rancho Los Amigos scale? Any other insight from your experience working with individuals with acquired brain injury?
Yeah, I would absolutely say pick your battles. If somebody is maybe perseverating or getting stuck on a certain event happening, and you know that that's not an accurate depiction of it, you really can't argue with them, because right now they don't have those reasoning skills to understand that, hey, maybe I'm remembering this the wrong way. So sometimes you just have to let things go for the sake of productivity and for the sake of your session. You know, you'll have to change courses and just say, okay, well, let's agree to disagree, or yeah, maybe that did happen, I just remember it differently, and then kind of go about your business with that patient. It's a very tough thing to do, because we always want to be right.
Sure.
You know, we always want to educate, and we want that carryover, you know, but with these patients, unfortunately, that's not always going to happen all the time.
More information, some resources that you suggest. I always like to leave listeners with some things to go out and find if they want to seek out more information. Anything you suggest in particular?
Oh, absolutely. I've got a laundry list. How much time do you have?
Let's go for it.
First thing I would recommend people doing is becoming a certified brain injury specialist through the Brain Injury Association of America. And you can find that information at BIAUSA.org. And what a certified brain injury specialist is it's somebody who has really taken the time to get that extra training to designate themselves as a clinician that is comfortable with this population and that wants to continue working with this population as a specialty. I am an instructor for the course to be a certified brain injury specialist. I've been doing that for about 5 or 6 years now through the Brain Injury Association of America. Other clinicians and professionals that I've educated have found it very, very helpful to help you give a nice big picture, you know, with these patients. Also, I encourage everybody to look at their state organizations and see what you have available. I'm based in New Jersey, so we have the Brain Injury Alliance of New Jersey. Other states, such as Pennsylvania, have the Brain Injury Association of Pennsylvania, so you may have to do a little looking. But those state organizations really have a lot of great resources and free support services for patients living in the community with brain injury. You know, unfortunately, follow-up care and services sometimes are very difficult for these patients to obtain. So I do my best to try and set them up with these things before they leave us, or even after they leave us. You know, I also do a support group for the county in which I live in New Jersey. So I always am trying to bring new things to empower patients to kind of advocate for themselves and find some other services. Also, if you're interested in some great cognitive therapy, I highly recommend the American Congress of Rehab Medicine's cognitive manual. It's an evidence-based manual that has great evidence-based therapy activities and things for executive function, memory, insight, judgment, problem solving. I was fortunate enough to go to the ACRM conference last week in Chicago, and it's just such a great interdisciplinary group. So even if you go for the manual, stay for the positive colleague interaction and, you know, those types of things.
More information, yeah. If someone wants to reach out to you, a good email address that they can use?
Sure. It's Allison, A-L-L-I-S-O-N, at arcseminars.net.
Allison, appreciate you taking some time out and walking us through acquired brain injury and behavior management with us today.
Jimmy, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to Foxcast SLP. It's brought to you by Fox Rehabilitation. Fox clinicians work hard, love their work, and get the respect they deserve. Sound good? Then you'll love the autonomy to work in your own style and the support you get to achieve excellence. Plus, freedom and flexibility to have a personal life. Whether it's your first day or you've been around for a while, your contribution is acknowledged and rewarded. That's what makes Fox a success. Happy, well-trained clinicians make great healthcare. Are you a fit for Fox? Find out now at foxrehab.org.